Welcome back to Sincerely Yours, the marketing and business podcast. That's all about building a brand and business that is authentic to you. Because when you start showing up for your business in an authentic way, abundance starts to flow. Today, we have a phenomenal guest joining us here to share her journey. Sue McGarry is the founder and creator of French Affair. French Affair was founded in 2008 and her business is simply delightful. French Affair is all about elegant, contemporary French linen and traditional stain-resistant tablecloths from Provence in France. I hope I got that right.
Absolutely. That sounds fabulous. I love it. Thank you.
Because she started her business right in global financial crisis. And she has emerged stronger than ever through the pandemic as well. And she's won many local and national awards. And it's so great to have her here on the podcast today to share her business journey and how she leverages the talent and outsourcing to help grow a wildly profitable business. Welcome to the show, Sue.
Thank you so much, Sam. It's a delight to be here.
We're not even through the year yet, Sue, and you have already won several awards. Australian Small Business Champions Award in the sole operator category, Australian Women's Small Business Champion Awards in the specialised business category, North Sydney Local Business Awards winner, sole operator. Congratulations on the achievement. Can you tell our listeners a bit about yourself, your background, experience? What led you to founding your business and why French Linen?
Yes, thank you. Well, as you said, French Affair is now an online business and I sell in pop-up shops in Sydney, but it's certainly a wiggly road to get there. When I left school, I had a science degree. I completed a science degree, so it's an awful long way from there to here. After I did that, I took another very different turn and became a marketing manager in shopping centres. So that's where I think I got my marketing grounding, working for regional shopping centres, managing their very big marketing budgets. And from there, I just got the yearning to be in small business. I wanted to be part of a small business rather than being in a large corporation. And the opportunity came up to buy into an entertainment agency. And so along with four other directors and some staff members, we booked entertainment for corporate events around Australia. And I did that for a very, very long time. And it was, as you mentioned, in 2008 when I decided to start French Affair. And that was as a response, I guess, to my growing love of France. I love the culture and the people and the language and everything about it. And I wanted to be involved in it in some way. So French Affair was born about 15 years ago. And I was doing that while I was at the agency. So it was weekends and evenings getting stuck into French Affair. But about 4 years ago, July 2019, well, before that, I wanted to focus more on French Affair. And so I managed myself out of the agency business. So in July 2019, I sadly waved goodbye to my other directors and started French Affair full time. And to be honest, it was supposed to be semi-retirement and just sort of dabble in French Affair and just have some fun with that as a pastime. But it turns out I'm not so good at retirement. And once I get stuck into a project, I want to take it to its full potential. So French Affair is just taken over my life, really. It's I love every minute of it. It's been as you mentioned, there's been lots of adventures, lots of challenges, but here we are four years later as an award-winning small business, and I love it. I just love it.
Amazing. Well, our listeners probably can't see us, but I can just feel the passion just oozing off the screen from Sydney all the way to Melbourne here. So how incredible is that when you're not focusing on achieving an income target and instead just focusing on what you love and the passion and the abundance and everything just comes to you, isn't it?
Absolutely. When the focus is, and I understand I was in a fortunate position when a lot of people are really focused on the dollar, they're holding on to it so tightly. And it's hard for abundance to be created when you are holding something so tightly. But if you release it and surrender and focus on the thing, and we'll talk about this a bit later, I'm sure, because your podcast is so much about authenticity and values and what's important to you. And one of my overarching values is joy. And that's the focus of the business. So it has to be joyful for me, for my customers, for anyone I bring in. And I think when you focus on that, then the abundance flows naturally, rather than focusing on the dollar and holding it so tightly, you almost strangle it. And that's where I think that's where the joy comes from me, focusing on what I love about the business. And I think other people can pick up on that as well.
So in the early days of business, you wore many hats as a sole operator, and your business is all about joy, but there are so many nitty-gritty bits in a business as well. You've got operations, accounts, and for your business, particularly inventory, and being an import and export business as well, there's all that sort of logistics side of it. Can you share some of the challenges that you find during that time when it comes to managing everything on your own?
Well, I think small business owners generally, when they're listening to your question, I think their answer is going to be very similar to mine, and that's time. We just don't have enough time. It's fabulous, and what I really enjoy is being across all areas of the business, to have full control over every aspect of the business. But what it does mean is your to-do list is always full. And as you mentioned, there's the day-to-day tasks, there's the getting the orders out, the product side of things, getting things up on the website, all the essential daily tasks. Then on top of that, hopefully you've got time for strategic planning so that you can plan the future of the business. And then on top of that, there's the opportunity to learn and grow. And business is so competitive these days, and little guys like us are up against the big guys. And for the consumer, they make the choice whether they're going to buy from me or from Amazon or from a big corporate. So we need to keep up with the strategies that those big businesses are using, and there's just not enough time to do everything. So it becomes the balance of working in the business and working on the business, and the finite resource is time. So I think that's been my challenge from the beginning and now, always.
It's always a constant juggle, isn't it? There's so many balls in the air, you're trying to catch everything, and yeah, hoping one doesn't fall off. So we mentioned time is a finite resource, and I know that burnout within a small business is a huge thing. It's so common as well. Was there any particular moment or the catalyst that came to you when you realized that it's time to consider that it might be time to outsource some aspects of your business operations?
Well, there's not one point that you come to where you wake up one morning and there's a neon flashing sign that says, today is outsource day. You've reached the point. Here we are. Now's the time to outsource. It's a gradual process. But for me, I think there were three things that signaled that it might be time to look at outsourcing. The first is overwhelm. There's just too many things to do. And yes, you do the essential things first. You get the orders out, you order the products, you make sure you've got them up on the website. But there's no time for creative thinking. There's no time for strategic planning. And that's okay in the short term. All businesses have a flow, and some days are busier than others. But it's not sustainable for me in the long term, and it's not sustainable for the business in the long term. So if you are in overwhelm for the majority of your day, for every week, perhaps it's time to consider outsourcing. And the second thing that comes from that is when you're in overwhelm, when you're under pressure, that's when mistakes are made. And I think one of the, I will share with you, and I must admit, I haven't really told anyone this because I was so embarrassed when it happened. And it was such a huge red flag. Possibly one of the worst mistakes that I've made was I was busy, I was just completely inundated, but I knew I had to put an order in with one of my overseas suppliers. And with fabrics, often it takes 3 or 4 weeks in production, and then it goes on a ship and it takes 2 or 3 months to come. So the lead time can be something like 3 to 6 months. And I just knew I had to get a reorder of this really popular fabric that was going to sell out. So at goodness knows what hour of the night, I put in this order and thought, oh, thank God that's done. And then I wait for 3 or 4, 5 months for this to arrive. The shipment arrives. I'm so excited. I race to the warehouse. I pull off the covering on the pallet, and I'm looking at a fabric that I do not recognize, that is not my popular fabric that had sold out that people were asking for. It was a design that I thought was awful. And I was mortified, and I raced. I have a pallet of this stuff. There are rolls and rolls and rolls of this fabric. And I raced back home, and I checked my order and checked my invoicing. And this is coming from Spain. And the name of the fabric was very similar to the popular product that I meant to order. But in my overwhelm, in my rush, in my trying to do too many things at once without thinking, I've ordered the wrong fabric. So I now have thousands of dollars at rolls and rolls of fabric that I didn't particularly like. Luckily, my customers thought it was okay, and eventually it sold out. But it was a constant reminder that I was spreading myself too thin. That was a huge red flag. So when you start to make mistakes, big ones like that or small ones, that's a sign that maybe you need help. And the third thing is that you miss opportunities. You can't capitalize on the things that come along. There might be the opportunity to collaborate with people or to be involved in certain promotions or do something a little differently, but you just don't have the time to capitalize on that opportunity. And frustratingly, sometimes I would be sewing tablecloths and getting out orders, and I would be frustrated because I knew there were things, other things that I could be doing for the business, more strategic aspects of the business, stupidly to create more orders, but I couldn't even deal with the orders I was currently getting. But I knew French Affair had so much more potential, and I wanted it to be the best business it could be. So when you're stuck in that bind, that's a clear sign that you can't do it all on your own. And perhaps that's the time where you need to outsource and look at someone to help. And I think across all of that, the critical question in any task is this the best use of my time? So when you're doing anything, not just in your business, but in your life, when you're washing your car, when you're cleaning your house, when I'm sewing tablecloths, is that the best use of my time? I could pay someone $50 to completely detail my car. I could pay someone $30 to clean my house or sew tablecloths. And in an hour for $30, I could create a really effective email marketing campaign that could generate $1,000 in sales. So coming back to that question, is there something else I could be doing that would give me a higher ROI? That's the key question. Is this the best use of my time?
I love it. You really encapsulate that so well. Is this the best year of my time? I've heard this saying before, and it's saying that when you're feeling that there's so many things you have to do, always take a step back and think, what is it that you want to achieve? If it is income generating, because a business is not a business until you have an income, and that is a fact, which is that, are you doing income generating activities or not? Absolutely. If it's not, then perhaps it's time to take a step back and reevaluate what you're doing and achieve that goal before you look at other things. So thank you so much for sharing that, Sue. Earlier in this episode, you mentioned that you love doing every aspect and getting your hands dirty in every aspect of the business. It's the same with a lot of us as well. And we have that struggle of and a fear of letting go and delegating tasks. How did you feel when you start when you knew it was time to hire support? What are the sort of emotional hurdles that you have to break through?
It's a big step, because small business is so personal, particularly when you're a sole operator. It is the business is you. So it's very hard. It's very hard to let go. We have this apprehension that no one can do it as well as me. And that may or may not be true. Let's flag that first of all, but it's definitely a fear. It's definitely something that we worry about. And there's also the concern, if you're bringing someone in, what if they don't work out? What if they make mistakes? What if things go wrong? But then on the other side, there's also the emotion of relief, because you get to offload some of that overwhelming workload. And the realization that you don't have to do it all on your own is actually liberating. When you surrender to that, you can start to feel excitement, because there'll be a fresh perspective, new people coming into your business that will give you new ideas and a different way of looking at things. And it also releases me to do more juicy projects, to get stuck into some of the stuff that I really wanted to do, and to learn more skills. So there's a mix of emotions, and I find that when something's scary and exciting at the same time, that's often the perfect combination to go into something. So that I think you can focus on both. Yes, it's scary, but it can also be exciting.
Okay, wow. Okay, definitely. It's one of those things, right, where change is always scary, but it's the unknown and the uncertainty that's really scaring us. I think if we focus on the positive, but the what if it is actually going to be really good, rather than focusing on the bad, then things might start to shift a bit. Your outlook and your day even will start to change and look differently. So can you share with us, who was the first subcontractor or your first external help that you sought?
I think initially I looked at things outside the business. So the first thing I outsourced was someone to come and clean the house every couple of weeks, because that's a task that can easily be done by someone else and releases me to focus on other things that are important. So I think that was the first thing outside the business. Then within the business over time, I found a VA who does data entry and some of the more repetitive work. She also does some of my social media posting, but only a very small component of that. Then I looked at someone to help me in the pop-up shop. So she does and she's a contractor. She comes in a couple of days a week to help me in the pop-up shop. I also outsourced the sewing of the tablecloths, which was a huge component of the business. Some of the tablecloths come in ready-made from Europe, but some of them I bring in the fabric and then make the tablecloths up from there. So bringing in some sewing ladies, and there were two styles of sewing ladies that I brought in. I had three or four that are external, so I dropped the fabric off to them and they sewed the tablecloths. Then there was another lady that I've brought on recently who comes to my house and converts all my offcuts, because I have a sustainability is one of my values. So I don't want any of those offcuts going to landfill, and I use those offcuts to create other beautiful homewares. So she comes to my house and creates the homewares from the offcuts. So I think they're the main things. Oh, I also outsourced when I'm in the pop-up shop and I change shopping centers, at the end of it, I need to load everything out into the van, move to the next shopping center, unload it, set it all up. And I've outsourced a component of that. So I have someone that helps me do that. Whereas before I would do that all on my own. And then there's also various little components that pop up. When it came time to swap from Google Analytics Universal to GA4, sometimes very specialized tasks, I'll outsource that to digital marketing professionals. Obviously building the website, bring in professionals for that. So as needed tasks along the way.
It definitely looks like a lot of those repetitive, bit laborious and things that you don't find joy in doing,
yeah,
that
absolutely.
You would outsource it, isn't it?
I think that's the key. Identify the things that you're good at and hold on to those, and particularly things that are critical to the success of the business. And the more high level strategic planning, keep that in house. But some of the more mundane repetitive tasks, you can also, I mean, I can't insource, but there's also the opportunity to insource, which means if you've got kids, there's some tasks in my business that if I had children, a 10-year-old could do. You know, I have some offcuts and I create them, make little strips out of them, and then I fray them so they make nice little linen ribbons. And I use those as a sustainable option to wrap up the orders to make them look nice and pretty when I send them out, rather than putting them in plastic or extra packaging. And that's a task that a 10-year-old could do. If you've got stickers that need to go on products or labels, that's a task a 10-year-old could do. So, maybe look at insourcing when and incentivizing your kids or people within your family. So that's an option as well, insourcing and outsourcing.
Such a great idea, insourcing, which reminds me that outside of my business, I've got a coming up to 4-year-old son, and I've recently asked him to start doing some of his own chores. So, bringing his dishes back to me to
Yes.
put in dishwasher, and also hauling his own clothes off the clothesline, and that saves me about 5-10 minutes. And it's 5-10 minutes extra for me to sip my coffee in the morning, for example. So that's really fantastic. Good idea, insourcing. Love
Yeah,
it.
and then he becomes involved in the family and feels he's contributing, and he learns responsibility. It's a win-win all round.
Definitely. Can you share with us how do you feel after you started outsourcing some of the tasks, and tell what was the impact on your business? Did you experience growth after you started outsourcing some of the tasks, like hiring a shop assistant for the pop-up shop?
Yeah, absolutely. The outcomes have been amazing, but I think it's you need to be aware, first of all, that the results may not start immediately. You do need sometimes with outsourcing, it actually takes more time to start off with. So it's like one step back and two steps forward because you need time to onboard the person, set things up properly for success. So when you start, it does actually take more of your time. But if you set it up properly, then you've got a better chance of things running smoothly after that. So once things were in place, that frees up my time to devote to higher value tasks. So I've got the mental energy to be more creative. But on a practical level, for the business, it helps in so many small ways. So, for example, with my VA doing data entry, in the past, if I had 300 entries in a competition at an event, those names would sit doing nothing for, months because I didn't have time to put them on the database. Whereas now the VA can put them on immediately. So those people are immediately in my email marketing flows. They're immediately in the marketing funnel. So I can start to get the benefit of that straight away. With my pop-up shop lady, there's no way that I could do the amount of pop-up shops that I do if I needed to be there every day. From October to December, I have a pop-up shop every day until Christmas. And I could not do that as well as run the business and look after the online orders and do everything else if I didn't have someone coming in to relieve me for a couple of days a week. And she's also doing tasks at the pop-up shop when there's no customers. For example, my on-sell and upsell, when I load things onto my online shop, I put the product in because I'm usually in a rush to get it up there, but I don't do the on-sell upsell because it's a bit fiddly and it takes time and I just want to get all the products up so that they're on for sale. But my pop-up shop lady, she knows the products intimately. She knows what goes with what, and she does that when there are no customers at the pop-up shop. Whereas before, those things weren't being done, which meant I was missing out on the opportunity to increase the average order value, because the on-sell and upsell weren't in there. So there's lots of little components in the business, and it's often in business those 5% things and the 10% things that make a difference that get you to your goals. And I think probably one of the other outcomes that I don't see now, but I will see in the future, is that by outsourcing, I'm actually making the business more saleable. So when it's time to sell the business, not that I want to in the near future, I'm creating an operations manual because I need to give clear instructions to people that I'm outsourcing to. I need to give them clear instructions on what tasks they're doing. And that's creating an operations manual so that when someone comes in, they can see that the business is systemized and there's a procedure to follow. That makes the business more saleable, and you can get more money for a business where there are clearly systems in place. And also, it's expanded the potential buyers for the business, because 4 years ago, the market for people who could buy my business, they needed to be able to do everything, including sewing tablecloths. Whereas the moment that I outsourced the role of selling tablecloths, now I've expanded the potential buyers of my business because you don't need to be able to sell tablecloths to now buy my business. So every time I outsource a specific skill, I'm expanding the potential market for people who are able to buy my business. So I think that's a benefit that is often overlooked when outsourcing, but will be really appreciated by the time it comes to putting the business for sale.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing that experience, because I know for a fact that particularly when you're a sole operator, one of the most immediate concern when considering hiring someone or outsourcing is often the cost. So it's good that you share with us that you're not going to see the return, the ROI, immediately, but over the long term, if planned correctly, you should see ROI. For example, you can start doing Christmas markets every day now. Is it fair to say that your business income, now that you have a good network of support around you compared to before when you had to do everything on your own, has increased tremendously?
Absolutely. Without outsourcing, I would definitely have hit an income ceiling, because there's only so much that you can do. And I think there's two components to it. There's only so much you can do within the business. There's only so many orders you can prepare and send out, and there's the day-to-day operations of the business. But I think the thing that made the big difference for me was outsourcing freed up my time so I could invest in learning. And when you're knee-deep in the business, you can't do that. You just don't have the time. So by releasing the hold on some of those areas of my business and letting someone else do those tasks, I was able to study digital marketing. I was able to do an SEO course. Earlier this year, I did a three-month intensive e-commerce one-on-one coaching program. And without being able to do those sort of courses and get that coaching, there's no way my business would be where it is at the moment. When I first went full time back in July 2019, for the previous year, my online sales were $5,015 plus GST for the whole year. That was when I started full time. Admittedly, I was doing markets and I was doing a couple of other things as well, but online was $5,015 plus GST. That was 4 years ago. And now I do that figure. That's my average month. That's my average week when I'm at the moment. So that's an enormous change. And that was only possible because of doing the digital marketing course, the SEO course, the e-commerce coaching course. So it's not just the time it releases for you to do other things. It's the exponential growth that you'll get from learning new things in your business.
Yeah, I definitely realized that. I noticed that you were subscribed to or you were doing Kate Toon's SEO course, because I saw, I think we sort of run in a similar circle. So I mean, business is pretty, it's a pretty small circle anyway. So I've been seeing your ads pop up on my Google as well, because I Google French Affairs. So definitely whatever you're doing, so it is
I'll be
working.
Stalking you online now. Yeah, Kate Toon's SEO course was a game changer. I'm also part of her Digital Marketing Collective, which is a group of 300 amazing, amazing business humans. And it's those things that I've been able to access because of the time that's been released by being able to outsource. And I mean, the last 4 years have been challenging. There's been COVID. We're now in an economic downturn. On top of that, my partner got CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, and he has a very severe case of that. So he's been bedbound for the last 2 years, and I'm his sole carer. So we don't have There's no government assistance. Our families are interstate and overseas, so I'm his sole carer. And I know a lot of people in small business, they're in a similar situation. Maybe they're looking after elderly parents. They have children. They have a family to look after. So there's always competing priorities. And with all of that, with COVID, with the current situation, with Dave being a carer for Dave across that time, French Affair has grown every single year, in income and in profitability. And it's just ticked over. So my 12-month revenue has passed $500,000 now. And there's no way that I could do that without outsourcing, without burning out. It's just impossible. So yeah, outsourcing has been the key to being able to achieve that sort of growth without burning out.
That is amazing. Thank you so much, Sue, for sharing that too. For some of our listeners who may be contemplating outsourcing for the first time, what sort of practical tips or considerations would you offer them, particularly when it comes to getting external support that aligns with your values as well? For example, sewing is a big part of your business, and I would say it is almost the soul of it, because it is in the products that you sell as well. So how did you go around finding sewers, for example, that aligns with the style and value of French Affair?
French Affair's values are respect, integrity, sustainability, and as I mentioned, the overarching value of all of that is joy. So the first thing to do is, when you're thinking of bringing people into your business, is to try and find people with similar values to you. And although they're my business values, obviously they're my values as well. They're intrinsically linked when you're a small business. So if you find people with similar values to start off with, then they are going to be a good fit. But you also need to clearly communicate your values when you onboard anyone into the business. And also, you need to live your values. My conduct, that's my values in action. So my team can see the way I treat them, the way I treat my customers. And then there's an easy blueprint for them to follow. Luckily, with my sewing ladies, coincidentally, all of them are part of the Boomerang Bags movement. So they're already involved in sustainability. So they understand my focus on sustainability. And treating people with respect and integrity. When their invoices come in, I pay them immediately. Like, as soon as they hit my inbox, I jump across. And so that's part of dealing with them with respect and integrity. And that means that it is a joyful experience for them to work with me, because we are aligned. When Isabel's in the pop-up shop, she knows my values. She knows the French Affair values. So if a customer comes to her with a problem, or she knows how to deal with that without talking to me, because she knows that I need to treat this customer with integrity and respect. So without having to ask me, she knows what decisions to make without having to check with me, because it will align with the business. So I think it's important to look for people with a similar set of values, but also communicate your values very clearly. Because that allows everyone to be congruent within the organization.
Yeah, that's fantastic. From what I can hear, is that being open as well, by not gatekeeping information with your shop assistant, Isabel, for example, that she has been able to handle customer requests and support requests on her own without coming back to you, and you're treating her with respect, and therefore freeing up your time as well in order to pursue
that's true.
Things that you want to do, and therefore growing business. So openness invites abundance. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I love that.
So going back to one of the questions that I've got is that budgeting for outsourcing, how did you manage that fine line between cash flow and also budgeting for hiring and paying invoices, particularly in this economic situation as well? I'm sure that is on a lot of small business owners' mind.
Yeah, that you do have to weigh up. You do have to weigh up the ROI of bringing someone else into the business, because there is a cost to do that. But if it's going to release your time to focus on higher value and higher profit generating activities, then it may be worthwhile considering it. But there is definitely a financial consideration to look at. But also remember that outsourcing is something that it's like a tap. You can turn it on and you can turn it off. So it's not a huge commitment, for example, putting on a full-time employee, where once you're in, you're really in, and you've got to stay it for the long term. You can dip your toe in the water to see what improvements you're going to get and reevaluate it. And if it's working, you can expand it. If it's not, you can stop it. So I think it's important to look at your finances and see what the business can support, and try and get an estimation of what ROI you think you're going to release by by putting this person on and then monitoring it quite carefully, particularly in the beginning, just to make sure that it's going to be a financial, you know, a financial benefit for the business.
Yeah, that's so wise, Sue. Very, very good advice there. Reflecting on your journey, what sort of messages would you like to share with our, or leave our listeners with, particularly when it comes to staying true and authentic to your business mission and your outsourcing?
I think as we've mentioned, small business is personal. It's small business is an extension of you. So your business mission and values are at the core of what makes your brand unique and meaningful. So while outsourcing can bring efficiency and expertise in the business, it should never compromise the essence of what you're doing, the essence of your values and your mission. So that's where communicating your core values and your business principles to everyone you bring in is so important. And you can get them enthused and enrolled in your mission. And then they can go on that journey with you. So as the business owner, you're the ultimate guardian of your business's, of your brand's authenticity. So while you're outsourcing those tasks, make sure you continue to oversee them and steer it in the general direction of your business, because staying true and authentic to your business mission is not just a noble aspiration. It's a strategic advantage. So it's what sets you apart from Amazon and Kmart. That's what your customers are connecting with. So that's the thing that makes your business relevant and resilient. So when you're outsourcing, remember to keep that aligned with your values, because those core values and authenticity are actually your strategic advantage. Be more you. So I think it can be really powerful, but make sure you keep it, you know, you stay authentic to the reason that you were doing it to start off with. And I think one of the best pieces of advice that I've ever been given was the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions. So as you're bringing someone on, it's easy to get to be concerned about what if they mess up, what if they make mistakes, what if they don't work out. But instead of asking those questions, which are very negative questions and focus you on the problem, instead of saying what if they make mistakes, a better quality question is what processes can I put in place to make sure they get it right? Instead of thinking what if they don't work out, a better quality question is how can I choose the right person to give them the best chance of success? So if you ask yourself more empowering questions, that will lead to much more exciting outcomes. And the style of your question should focus on the opportunities and the solutions, not the problems. So that's one of the best pieces of advice I've ever had. The quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions.
I love it. Quality of life is determined by the quality of your questions. Is that right?
Yeah, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions. It's all
brilliant.
It revolves around the RAS, the reticular activating system. And yep. If your listeners are not familiar with that, look it up. It's so exciting. Basically, what your brain focuses on is what you're going to get. So if you're going to focus on problems, that's what you're going to get. But if you're focusing on the solutions and the opportunities, there's too much sensory input for your brain. So it has a little gatekeeper. Let's call it the reticular activating system, that will only allow in the things that it knows your brain's interested in, because it wants to feed you stuff that you like. So if you're constantly focusing on problems, that's what it's going to find for you. But if you're constantly focused on opportunities and solutions, your brain will seek out those things and draw them to you. So it's the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions.
Absolutely. That is so, so brilliant. Sue, could you give us a glimpse into some exciting plans for the future at French Affair?
My exciting plan at the moment, somewhat foolhardy, somewhat audacious, but my exciting plan at the moment is to double my online sales this year. I'm trying to move away from pop-up shops so I can spend more time at home to be with my partner. and focus more on the online sales. So that's why I've been knee deep in learning lots of exciting things to double my online sales. And it's going well. It's pretty much on track. And, you know, imagine if I failed and only got 70% increase in online sales. So that's pretty exciting. But I'm also looking when my partner recovers, we're also looking to move to bigger premises, perhaps something a little bit more rural, to allow me to consolidate every component of French Affair in the one little spot. So instead of having some things at the warehouse and some here and some in the pop-up shop and some in the van, and if I have everything together, my office, my sewing room, all my stock, that actually makes it easier to outsource, because then I can bring someone in to sew, pack orders in a more coherent manner, and it can all happen in the one spot, which then releases me to go to Europe and go to the trade shows and swan about and have fun in Paris and Italy and Spain. So that's my future plans. We'll just have to get my partner better first of all before we can do that.
Definitely. And with such a good planning and systems in place, I'm sure you can achieve that and so much more soon. Before we finish up, can you share with us any resources or tools that you have found particularly helpful for you, whether it's in your day-to-day business or managing or outsourcing talent, or even just a good book that you've read recently?
We've talked a lot about the digital marketing side of things in the business. But if I was to give you my, say, two most useful tools at the moment, I'm going to go very analog, very, very old school. The most important tool I have at the moment, I think, is the good old fashioned spreadsheet. At the end of each month, I put together all of my metrics on one spreadsheet, because I find in small business, particularly retail is detail. And when there are so many plates spinning, it's, you know, like the act in the circus where there's plates all spinning and there's lots of them, and if you're not careful, you focus on one and the other one falls down. That's exactly what small business is like, and it can be hard to keep all the plates spinning, but it's also hard to know which ones are going to fall off at which time. And my spreadsheet of the monthly metrics helps keep all of that on track, so that at the end of each month I put in everything related to the business, so the summary of the financials, the website performance, the performance of email funnels, email campaigns, Google ads, Facebook ads, the metrics of everything across the board. And with all of that, I can calculate the MER, the marketing efficiency ratio. But what it shows me are the trends. So I can immediately see if something's trending down or if something's trending up. So it gives me an immediate reference of what to focus on, what opportunities might be arising. And it just keeps me on track to give an overview of the whole business every month on the one spreadsheet. So it's not very high tech, but that spreadsheet keeps my business on track. The second resource or tool that I find invaluable is having a trusted network. And that's what I find with Kate Toon's Digital Marketing Collective. Within that group, there are 300 amazing business humans involved in digital marketing, but also people like me who just have an e-commerce business, or people who have a service business. And being able to have access to people in a similar situation to me in small business who have the same challenges, we can vent when we're frustrated that something's not working. There are people that will high five you and celebrate with you and support you when things are going well. A sounding board if you're looking to try something new, encouragement to get you on the right track if things are not going so great. As an entrepreneur, as a solo entrepreneur, a solo business person, in my situation, because my partner's not well and is not always available to talk things through with, but there are lots of people in that situation where they may have a partner who's not supportive, or a family who don't understand their journey. And it can be very lonely just sitting there doing the best you can. So having this network, a trusted network of amazing humans, is it's my lifeline. They're amazing. So if you can find either a business buddy or a mastermind group or some sort of group of people to support you on a similar journey, that makes it so much more fun. So they're definitely a source of joy for me. So that would be my two things: spreadsheets and a trusted network. Surround yourself with people who understand you and will support your business. I'm a big believer that it takes a village to create a successful small business, and they are my village.
100%. Going back to basics, using the good old spreadsheet to prevent that sensory overload with all these high-tech stuff that's out there, and also just surrounding yourself with good people who support your mission. Fantastic. So we know that retail season's coming up, Christmas is coming up, or if we have any questions at all, where can we find you?
Oh, how exciting. The hub is the website, so frenchaffair.com.au. And on there, you'll find my contact details, all my socials, everything on the website. You can also find me on Instagram. The handle is frenchaffair.sue. And as Christmas is coming up, I'd also like to offer your listeners a special little treat for sticking with us and supporting your podcast. So if they'd like a 10% discount store-wide, when they get to checkout, just put in SY10. So SY for Sincerely Yours and the number 10. So SY10 at the use that coupon code at checkout, and they'll get a 10% discount off some fabulous European tablecloths.
SY10. I will definitely remember that. Christmas is coming. I've got to start my Christmas shopping too. So
yes.
You might see me on your shop soon.
Fabulous. That would be wonderful.
I will pop that all in the show notes as well. So your business journey has been, it's truly inspiring for solopreneurs, micro business owners, and just anyone listening who wants to start a business in general. Thank you so much for joining us today. It really shows that when done right, outsourcing can be a game changer for small business to scale. And it's really not just about delegating tasks, but also about strategic growth that's still heart-centered and authentic to you and aligns with your own value as the creator and face of your own business. Thank you so much, Sue, for sharing your remarkable journey with us, and take care.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Sam. It's been delightful to talk with you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Sincerely Yours. I hope you enjoyed our brief time together exploring the world of marketing and branding. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. And if you have any questions or topics you'd like for me to cover in future episodes, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. You can find me on Instagram at SincereCopy. Remember, building a successful brand takes time and effort, but with the right strategies and insights, anything is possible. So don't give up and keep connecting with your audience and dream customers in a meaningful way. Keep listening to Sincerely Yours for the latest tips, tricks, and trends in the world of marketing. And I'll see you in the next episode.